Welcome back to the Morning Shift. Triple M for Tiffany. This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart. Lasting clean. Falcons 26, Saints 24. Tampa Bay coming in Thursday night. Kirk Cousins spoke with our David Archer after yesterday's victory.
Kirk, you and I had a chance to talk during the week getting ready for this game that divisional games, there's just something a little bit different about them. You played in a bunch of them when you're in Washington and in Minnesota. Now you're a part of this rivalry. Your first thoughts of the way this went down?
I love the energy in the stadium. I loved our fan base. I love the nest. We were backed up at a series in the fourth quarter, and during the TV timeout, the stadium was just rocking, and I kind of just took it in for a second and just appreciated the atmosphere that was there. So it was a great, great day and a great chance to win and really give our fans something to be excited about.
Can you describe the energy that all three phases were kind of feeding off one another? You got the turnover early for this touchdown, then Troy makes his play.
Yeah, you know, a special teams touchdown, a defensive touchdown, you know, huge, huge blessings to our offense to get that help. And then Ku's kick at the end was a huge special teams lift for us. You know, it was complimentary football all game long, and that's how you win in this league. And, you know, I kind of have this, like, bittersweet feeling right now. You love to win, and that trumps everything. But, you know, certainly felt like offensively could have played a little better.
Really good defensive unit you faced today. So it was a kind of punch, counterpunch. It felt like didn't get a run game going early. Looked like you were operating really well in the pass game. Then all of a sudden the run game started to click for you a little bit.
Yeah, I thought Tyler ran the football really well today. And not only, you know, ran it well, but I thought after the catch, too, made a huge third down conversion. We moved the football, and then drives would stall kind of in the high red zone area for whatever reason, penalties or just not converting third downs. And so kicked a lot of field goals today. And then, you know, the penalties were tough for us at times. They really hurt us in some drives and took away a touchdown. And so we left a little bit out there.
It's cool to see the ongoing chemistry that continues to build. You and Darnell Mooney, and Drake London, you guys, those two in particular. Ray made a couple of really nice plays for you. The one where you got out of the pocket and he laid out to make a play. Tell me about that.
It was a great play by Ray. You know, I agree that I have to continue to learn from each game, to anticipate better to these receivers. I thought one of our first third downs of the game was a third and long. Drake, it was tight coverage when I let the ball go, but I just feel like, you know what, at his size, with his strong hands, I got to throw that football, and he's got to go get it, and that's how it's got to get done, and it was. And I thought, okay, that's the things where we're learning, and I'm trusting him, and he proved me right. And so there's still others, though, that you look back and you say, you know what, I got to anticipate differently or better or whatever it may be. And that's the stuff we'll have to talk about coming out of this one.
Leadership always has to be a part of things, but maybe even more so in a week like you've got coming up with a short week, another divisional opponent. Tell me about that.
Yeah, what a great opportunity for us after the hole we've dug ourselves starting 1-2 to be able to play two NFC South opponents and on Thursday night have a chance to get back above 500, you know, at home, primetime game. You know, it's a short week, but, you know, we can benefit from that. We can get a lot done in the walkthroughs and the jogthroughs. And, you know, we got a chance to really take a step forward here in our season on Thursday night. And our preparation the next few days needs to reflect that.
Congratulations on the W.
All right. Thanks, Arch.
All right. It's Kirk Cousins. More importantly, though, there's this cultural phenomenon that Kirk Cousins looks with childlike wonder about. He was asked about this certain cultural phenomenon.
I loved it. It was the fourth quarter. We were a little bit backed up, and it was a TV timeout. And they were playing that song about you swag and surf, and the whole stadium was moving. And I looked around. I was like, this is pretty sweet. And the nest especially. I love the nest. The nest may be my favorite thing about being a Falcon. That's awesome, the energy they bring. So, you felt it today. And we need to win and play at a level that'll keep it that way all year long and into January. But I can't say enough about the environment today and the way our fans showed up. I was really, really pleased with the atmosphere we got to play in. It was a privilege.
Sounds like such a dad.
I know. It was a privilege to play in the atmosphere. And shout out to the Nest. The Nest. My good people in the Nest, man. And I think he brings up such a good point.
That is
such
swag and surf.
Yeah. That's such a cool atmosphere over in the corner in the Nest, man. Got to tip your hat to the group of people over there that really bring that fire every freaking game.
Good Lord. Speaking of fire, did you see all the fights in the 300 section yesterday?
All over the stadium. Man. All over the stadium, man. And it's
funny
rough
because
to watch.
In a 30-minute span, I would say, I got texts from different group chats with different fights. And I was like, damn, they really were. And it really didn't feel like there was many Saints fans there as I've seen in the past. And maybe I just got into the game and just kind of drowned some of it out. But I felt like the crowd was pretty, you know, that was That was a good crowd for Falcons fans. Still,
well, it was Falcon on Falcon crime, though. I mean, Falcon fans fighting amongst themselves.
Some of it was Falcon Saints fans.
Some
as
of it
well.
Definitely was. Yeah. It's unfortunate to watch, man. And you know, this has started happening more in college stadiums, too, with the introduction of more booze in college stadiums. And that's exactly what it is. It's booze filled, but, you know, can't highlight that. Unfortunately, because it just happens all too often. It just stinks watching it on the videos.
Well, one gigantic dude, this looked like attempted murder. This small guy, he clearly had won the fight, and then he started stomping his head, and that guy's body looked basically lifeless. I don't know what the result of
that guy should be locked up.
Absolutely.
He should go to jail, and there should, you know, there should be something, because that is that
you saw that one, right?
Yeah, that's taking it way too far. I think the one thing that you've kind of seen about this team is they have each week. It's a different guy stepping up, and that's the depth that that really you see. Because like yesterday on the defensive side, Troy Anderson steps up, right? Because they're running the ball down, and all of a sudden he gets an interception, Rob. And you described it earlier. It's a screen pass. Judon gets in the passing lane and is able to get his arm on it, and the ball goes in the air. And then you got that Montana State quarterback speed. And he's down, but
make him a Taysom Hill for the Falcons, man. Why not? Let's do it.
Well, if he wants, I would say make him our version of Travis Hunter, where, you know, we have him playing like a running back style and linebacker,
right?
But not a DB wide receiver.
But he's got to stay healthy, though.
He does, but that you look, there's no such thing as healthy once you get past week one in the NFL.
At least I'll be able to play, though.
You know? And I think you will. But I felt like his aggression completely went to a different level once he got. Once that interception had. And then I thought Tyler Algier had the play where he woke up, which was the little dump off outlet, and it's a third and I think 10. There's no it's a give up. You're just dropping it off because you're like, hey, want to be safe with the ball. And then when he runs over Alante Taylor, then he ends up getting the first down. All of a sudden, it was Tyler Algier time. And it just kind of unlocked him for the game.
Should he be getting more carries?
I think it's easy to say he should be getting more carries.
Yeah, I don't want to be too simplistic about it, but it seems like, you know, you want to go with a hot hand, but also, you know, there's other I get it, but.
But where are you going where he gets more carries? Because you've been limited in your possessions.
Right.
You're not getting as many plays. You've been brutally bad on third down, and
that's
honestly, it wasn't any better yesterday. Third downs weren't much better yesterday. They were better, but not good. They were 4 of 11 yesterday on third down for 36%. That's bad that you have been really bad on third down, which means you're not continuing to possess the ball. So I don't know who you're taking. You know, you're just not going to run the wishbone. And I thought yesterday was the perfect time for Algier to have a big game. And I love Tyler Algier. But it was the perfect time for him to have that game because guess what? Bijan's a little banged up.
Yep.
When he was on the injury report, he was a lot more effective in the passing game, Bijan was yesterday, than the run game. And Algier just started taking off, and it was a physical running game where you needed his style.
I'm telling you, that sense of doom, you know, remember when the Falcons stopped the Saints on fourth down late in the game. You get the ball back, what, about 4 minutes left. Ideal part where you can just run out the clock, but apparently they just stuffed the run for whatever reason, and that's what you want to do, and you sadly go three and out.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, I said to Arch before that drive, I said, I need 25 to eat here.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's great. He goes, but you know, they know that too.
Yeah.
And
you
can bet you that they're gonna load up. He goes, so whatever you do on first down, you have to have success. And guess what they didn't do?
Have success on first down.
Success on first down. Now you're throwing. They only had to burn one timeout. So it was, and then Algier made an actual crucial mistake because he catches the outlet on third down and he gets out of bounds. He goes out of bounds.
Yeah.
So the clock continues to run.
That's right.
So that's one of the situations where, as good as Algier was yesterday, you've got to have situational awareness.
Yeah, a little mental error there. I think the most disheartening thing though was, you know, Bijan Robinson touchdown, the holding on Jake Matthews. And then after that, you give up a sack and a fumble. Thankfully, that was covered by Bergeron. But you lost 21 yards because of that penalty in the sack after the touchdown was called back.
And I thought it was a crap call.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think they called that call against them in that particular way.
It didn't look particularly egregious at all either. I mean, there were many holdings that were – there was one play in particular where I think one of the Falcon offensive line was basically tackled, and that wasn't called.
Yeah, well, and Judon got tackled a few times yesterday.
Yep.
It was behind the play. I'll say this, though.
That's what I meant, the other side of the ball. Yep, yep.
Drake, it is third down, to your point, and Kirk Cousins makes a pretty ballsy throw to Drake London on the sideline right in front of us, and he let it go before Drake, I think, came out of his break, and you get enough back to be able to, you know, get back in field goal range, right. Kick the field goal, and you did get points, though.
All right, coming up next, an instant classic in Tuscaloosa. Georgia, Alabama. I'm going to get into that next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 1990 Game.
You know, you have to tip your cap to Mike Bobo, Carson Beck, and as much as any of them struggled in the first half, they played that well in the second half in crunch time. So the whole finish was absolutely unbelievable. I would have said the same thing. It was one of the games of the century, an incredible finish, even before the Ryan Williams play. And then you see that, and you're like, dude, that's unbelievable. I think Kirk Herbstreit actually, right after Fowler's call right there, goes, unbelievable.
What, four turnovers, you give up a safety, and you still take the lead late with a chance to win it. What was that thing you showed me online? It's hilarious. What is it, like a little baby deer running around?
It was a baby deer in the backyard. It said Ryan Williams versus man press. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's supposed to be in high school right now. He's supposed to be playing in a high school football game last Friday.
So theoretically, if he decides to go pro after his third year, he'll be a 19-year-old NFL player.
Yeah. Yeah, Kyle Pitts was very young when he first stepped on in the NFL as well. I think Pitts was 20.
He wouldn't be 19 in the NFL. He'd be 20 in his rookie year, but he would be 19 through the whole draft process, right. Senior Bowl combine, right. And everything else. He'd be 19 through that. That's insane.
I thought Georgia's defense was as bad as I've seen them in a long time. I mean, they looked awful. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't get enough pressure on Jalen Milrow to do anything. They looked like they didn't have a plan for them. And I know that it's easy to say, well, how do you not have any kind of plan? They're two of the better players in the country is Ryan Williams and Jalen Milrow. But you got to figure out a way to maybe take away one of them. Like maybe try to lock down and make Jalen Milrow run around and maybe say, hey, you know, you're gonna beat me with your feet. Or, you know what, I'm not going to let you out of the pocket, and you're just going to have to beat me with your arm.
Yeah.
But they didn't do either one. Yeah. I mean, Jalen Milrow had over right at, what, 500 yards of offense.
Yeah, he did. And you know what's funny? I asked you guys in Fair Foul if the winning quarterback of this game would be the Heisman favorite. And I don't know that he's like the runaway Heisman favorite, but Jalen Milrow in a lot of circles has kind of jumped to the lead on that one. BetMGM and whoever else it is.
Did you say would or should? Because I thought you said should.
No, it was would. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was would. I can look back at it right now. But, I mean, it's neither here nor there. I think it goes to show you. But I don't know. I kind of feel differently than you do about Georgia's defense. I think they struggled in the secondary. I was actually really impressed with the way they controlled the line of scrimmage in terms of interior runs. There was not many yards to be had on interior runs, and that's one of the things that I thought Jalen Milrow would have a great time at. Some of the gap schemes, powers, counters, and things with the interior runs, they shut that down. And then they widened out and played better contain after the first couple of touchdowns. They played better contain on Jalen Milrow and strung out some of those plays. And really, Milrow was kind of shut down running towards the end, had to use his arm to make some of those plays in the second half.
Yeah, well, when you tally it all up, he was getting 7 yards a clip. And he busted off a big one. It was down the sideline, wasn't it? I think that was a 36-yarder for the touchdown. I just thought Jalen Milrow played phenomenal. He looked like the best one-way player in college football Saturday night.
Yeah.
Because I think the best two-way player is the best player overall, really, to me, is Travis Hunter.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and it'll be interesting.
He struck a Heisman pose on that interception against Central Florida.
He deserves it. Might be a little bit early, but that's another impressive team we probably need to get into as the week goes on, because I thought they looked as good as they've looked since Deion's been there. So hats off to them.
Colorado might have looked as good as they looked since Cordell Stewart was there.
I'm very grateful for that we've said that, I don't know, a week ago. You know, we just had to win, and we've done a good job of going out every day and trying to go 1-0. And, you know, we're coming off a really big high last night, but that's baseball. It's the way it is. And you know what? We'll start it out fresh tomorrow with, like I say, it's two of our better guys going. So that's about as good as I can feel. I mean, with Schwelle going the first one and then Sale too. And you know what? It's balls in our court. I'm buried.
He's what? He's buried.
What? You got to go 1-1 today, Stitt. Got to go 1-1. Welcome back, Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany. Going to get to mic'd up in a moment. 1-10, first game today, Braves-Mets. Spencer Schwellenbach on the mound for the Braves.
against Tyler McGill, who in his one appearance this year against the Braves, gave up 3 home runs in 6 innings. So he's pitched. The Braves have faced him a lot. They've been good against him. This guy likes. He got about 8 pitches, but he really relies on his four seam. So
it's such an interesting dynamic, man. I don't know, and you guys probably know Braves history as well as anybody in this town. I can't remember any situation as unique as this one in terms of games you have to win, but also games you have to play because of the seeding and everything else, and games that might not matter, and then the pitching staff that will be absolutely put up against the wall for the next couple of days.
Rob, was it 92 or 91? I think it was 92, where the Braves are playing and the Giants are playing at the same time. The Braves game finishes and they watch the Giants.
That was 91. That was the first time they'd won the division since 82. And I remember I was in a bar.
Yeah,
watching it.
I was
in a famous pub in Cocoa Hills.
That a boy. I of course you were in a bar.
Let's go.
But yeah, that. So Mike, to your question or your statement, that's one that I remember being just wild because Rob, you can give a lot more insight on it because you remember a lot more vividly than I do. But that was one where you literally finished the game, and you had no clue what your fate was, and you had to turn because there were no wild cards back then, y'all.
Yeah.
It was basically 2 divisions. You win your division, you play in the LCS.
And hoping and praying the Giants beat the Dodgers. That was the same year Daryl Strawberry said, "We don't care about Atlanta."
Well, Daryl, there's lots of things Daryl Strawberry didn't care about and some he should have cared about.
So you'll get Schwellenbach today. And possibly Chris Sale tonight. And then if you have to face the Padres for the next 3 days, it is such a bonus for Fernando Lopez kind of back in the fold and everything that
pitched
brings
well
to the table.
Too.
Yeah, and pitched well.
I told you he was coming.
Yeah, we'll get to this later, but I got to give you credit for the Matthew Hennessy call. I thought there was no way they were going to activate Matthew Hennessy coming straight off the street into game action. But yet, there we were yesterday, and Chris Goforth in the pregame goes, "Matt Hennessy's active." And I'm like, "Dude, what?
Chris,
like, what?"
I know when Chris said that, Mike was like, "I'm going to hear about this."
I said it on air. I said, "It's absolutely shocking to me that Matthew Hennessy comes off the street and beats out everybody that was in training camp and everything else to be active as part of this roster." Anyways,
by the way, very quickly, though, if the Braves do win one of the games today and get to the playoffs, game 1 against the Padres, 8:35 tomorrow, and you're going to fly across the country, then get ready to play a ball game.
And I want to say this. There's only like 40 to 45 minutes between game 1 and game 2 today. So whatever happens, it's going to be a quick turnaround, and if we lose game 1, I say we, the Braves, you guys better buckle up with your TVs.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to watch. I got a unique question for those of y'all out there, though, on a unique week of Atlanta sports. Let's hit it. Yeah, it's an interesting week and really a massive weekend that was Atlanta sports. When you look at an incredible game Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, you look at the Falcons against the Saints yesterday and another barn burner in a game that was won, you know, just defensively and gritty and everything else. And the Falcons offense, though, comes up a little bit short of expectations once again. And then over the weekend, you see the Atlanta Braves take the first 2 Friday and Saturday, and yet yesterday, as I'm sitting here in the postgame, their offense comes up short once again, and it's
frustrating.
Oh, and you're
starting pitching, too, with Charlie Morton. Good Lord.
It kind of occurred to me yesterday in the postgame, and I'm sitting there kind of watching everything that's going on. All the expectations in the world of what this Atlanta Falcons offense can and will be, and yet they just continue to struggle to get touchdowns. And on the flip side, and you've dealt with a number of injuries, but everything you thought the Braves would be in 2024, they have not been. And yet you continue to struggle hitting with runners in scoring position, even though you won Friday and Saturday, not getting anything done with runners in scoring position, and you're able to kind of press that way. But I suggest this question to you guys. As we move ahead to the next few days, which offense do you trust more? Is it the Atlanta Braves and all this crunch time situation with the entire season on the line? Or will it be the Falcons going into Thursday night against the Buccaneers with the division lead on the line? Rob, what say you? Which one do you feel better about?
I don't feel particularly great about either one.
I guess, is that a fair?
You know, it's kind of a push.
It's not fair or foul. It's fine.
maybe just by a tick, the Braves.
Yeah, why is that?
Well,
does that say more about the Braves or does it say more about the Falcons?
Probably just says more about the Falcons, perhaps.
Yeah.
If you ask
yeah.
me, but I mean, certainly this offense hasn't peaked for the Falcons. I mean, they're chipping away at it, trying to figure something out. Certainly, you got a first year offensive coordinator, first year head coach, first year quarterback. I mean,
well, that's why
and you're still 2-2.
That's why I think it's the Falcons, because I've seen what the Braves are. I have got more than a sample size. I've got 160 games of just whatever this is, and it's not of inconsistency, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yep.
And the Falcons have shown these glimmers. Darnell Mooney and Kirk Cousins are still starting to take off. Drake London, I think, is turning into just that. I mean, every catch he makes is contested, and it is phenomenal with some of the catches. The biggest bugaboo for me right now is I've got a tight end who wears number 8, and he plays like he's Darnell Mooney's size.
I can't disagree with you, man.
And I'm getting kind of sick of watching it, and I cannot go to bat for him any longer.
Lack of urgency, lack of aggressiveness.
There's no sense of urgency or aggression.
Lack of gaffe. Is what I would call it. Lack of gaff, GAF.
And I'm no one's a bigger fan of the tight end than me.
Yeah, no, and we all expect that. You and I sat there and talked to him. We expect him to have a massive year. And I don't think it's that they're not trying to get in the ball. Let me ask you this question about Kyle Pitts before I even move on. Let me ask you this question. The Kyle Pitts thing, the whole narrative about where are his catches, where is his touches, where is his points, is that not to y'all more of a national narrative? I don't think the Falcons fan base are really the ones asking that question, because the Falcons fan base, in my opinion, is saying, I don't care what it takes, let's just win. It seems like people outside of the city and outside of the organization are the ones going, where is Kyle Pitts?
I don't wholeheartedly agree with that. I think there is an extent of that, because everything is fantasy football place, and you have people who claim to be analysts, and then they want to
come. Analysts?
Oh. Yeah, then they want to comment like they're a fantasy football owner. But the problem for me is you know, I brought up the tight end right after Drake London, because Drake London is making the catches that I need the tight end to make.
Contested, rangy.
Yeah.
Physical.
There's a route where
and he's blocking better.
There's a route where he is. Now they're also different assignments sure. who they're blocking. But there's a route where the tight end turns and doesn't basically his route is sloppy.
Yeah.
Okay.
He rounds
at the
off.
Top of it, and he's got to round it off with some aggression, some power, some physicality, and he doesn't. So he gets ran through by a defensive back. A tight end should not get run through by a defensive back.
I think a lot of people want them to force feed Kyle Pitts, and let's flip that back over to the Braves. Do you think that they're putting too much on Ozzie Albies hitting in the lineup at the number 2 spot right now? What does he go, 0 for 5, 0 for 6 yesterday? Can't get anybody moved over. He's hitting from only the right side. I think they're putting too much on his shoulders and trying to force him into a situation, much like I think that some people want Kyle Pitts to do. It's kind of interesting to see the way they've utilized Ozzie Albies. I think they're asking too much of him too soon, and I think they need to kind of take something off him. If he's going to hit from the right side, he's not going to be as clutch.
No, I disagree. I think he's a great hitter from the right side. I think I like him better, honestly, from the right side. I understand I completely disagree. Ozzie Albies is a leader on this baseball team. He's one of the young guys that came up that you couldn't do without. That's why you even moved him from short to second, so he was on the field immediately when him and Dansby were up here. It's time to lead then. This is crunch time.
If you feel that way, he better lead with that bat soon.
Good approaches to the plate, little patience, get a good pitch to hit. Don't try to do too much. That's all it is.
There you go.
You gotta calm your brain down, is all you gotta do.
Thanks for playing, guys. That's mic'd up.
Well, don't you love where they throw to Darnell Mooney on that last drive, and Paulson Adebo just tackles him and then starts celebrating like he didn't do anything wrong. Clown.
Just such a blatant pass interference to the tune of
he's a pretty
32
good player.
Yards. Yeah?
For the most part, Adebo's not a bad player.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. You heard Mike bring up the notion, whose offense do you trust more, Braves or Falcons? What can the Falcons do to get to the next level of this offense? They're kind of sputtering about, but you're still 2-2. Tampa Bay coming in Thursday night at 3-1. It's morning shift, Sports Radio, 1990 game.